Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Inside segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
Mamalu is a guy that I really, really feel for. Hearing his story and his troubled relationship with his family and hearing his circumstances, it just seemed like he was just trying to survive.
That's reality TV star Kim Kardashian West in the documentary from last year, Kim Kardashian West, The Justice Project. She's talking about Mamalu Stewart, a D.C. native sentenced to life in prison at the age of 16 after more than two decades behind bars, a chance at redemption for him that he has not wasted. Tonight, we're going to hear his story. It's a hard knock story and the inspiration he has become for so many. We begin tonight with Mamalu Stewart, returning citizen and motivational speaker. And later, we're going to hear from inmate life coach Seminde Lloyd and how she has been able to help him on his journey as a returning citizen. If you have comments, if you have questions, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Mamalu, thanks for joining the conversation. I really appreciate you spending some time with us.
Okay, thank you.
Absolutely. Let's start at the beginning. Why were you in prison?
So before we start off, I like to make sure, you know, truth is everything for me. So I like to stand on truth. So, I pretty much realized that, you know, because I've heard, you know, so much about your reputation. I know that you want to do the same. And Ben, though, this is the first time we actually meet, and I wanted to express first my gratitude for allowing me on the show. Secondly, I wanted to say that Miss Seminde Lloyd, she hasn't helped me at all with my reentry or reacclimating myself back to society. I just wanted to get that straight before we move further.
Okay. All right. Well, like you said, truth and transparency, tell the truth and shame the devil. I'm all for that. And I appreciate you spending some time with us on the program. So let's start at the beginning.
Okay. What was your question again?
The question was, how did you end up behind bars? What happened?
Okay. So listen, now we can go to the root of the issue. The root of the issue derives way before the actual crime that I committed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to think about, you know, when you ask that question is such a broad question. You know what I mean? So the answer is not going to be a simple answer, you know. But I would like to say that my incarceration started many years before my incarceration. Dealing with my incarceration mentally commenced before my physical incarceration. Dealing with trauma, dealing with Washington, D.C. being the murder capital, seeing young people be slain, including my best friends, as well as friends that I went to school with, seeing people be killed made me, because I had a decision, but I feel like at that time in my life, I was almost compelled to get a weapon because I wasn't taught the key pertinent principles besides fight or flight.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying?
I do.
So, being though I didn't have I wasn't able to properly foster myself into education of nonviolence or what it is to be nonviolent, because nonviolent is not to be meek. It's to actually, you know, be more of a thinker. You got to use your mind. You know what I mean? So you're not just going to pull out a gun and shoot somebody or kill somebody even when your life is in danger. You want to see if you can kind of like strategize the script in a way that it would be advantageous for you as well as whatever opponent or, you know, person that you may be in that might be trying to transgress. But to answer your question, I was 16 years old and I was convicted of committing the murder at the age of 16. Also, I had an assault case as well, two assault cases.
Mm. Can you tell us what happened?
Well, basically, to say the least, I was a misguided youth, made a very, very bad decision, a decision that I can never take back, but it was irreparable. It was thoughtless, and someone lost their life. And in that regard, I also lost my life, right?
Mm-hmm.
Going through incarceration. But in that loss, there was a win. And I say that because I used the time proactively to gain the education, to redeem myself, to pray for forgiveness, as well as to make peace with myself, my family, my creator, my ancestors, and knowing what my purpose is today with my life.
You were sentenced to life in prison, correct?
Correct.
When you were sentenced, when you heard the sentence and they put you behind bars, do you remember what was going through your mind when at that time you realized that you may really never see, you know, freedom again?
Okay, so, well, I think within all of people, within the human resources, the divine human resources that we have within us as well as outside of us, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that is the very element that allows us to hope. So even in a hopeless situation such as that, I've never felt as if I would die in prison. I always had hope. So, you know, hearing that, a life sentence, you know, I had to turn and see my family, my sister, my mother, you know, other family members crying and being very sentimental. And, of course, being supportive of my situation because they knew I wasn't a monster. They knew I wasn't a super predator or, you know, or all of these labels that we tend to get as young black men, young black people, you know what I'm saying? And it was just something always within me, even in the core of my ignorance, that told me that there was hope, that I could survive it, and that I could do better. At the same time, I was distraught. I did feel down. There were times of doubt, just as any other prophet, and I'm not comparing myself or, you know, trying to, you know, tie up to a prophet or anything, but
mm-hmm.
I believe that a lot of our people have been prophets, you know what I mean, have been great people, and they went through certain type of struggles. And just being able to look at our story, what they call his story, enabled me and compelled me to stay strong and to keep on pushing. So I never gave up. I never thought that it was over for me.
Mm. I'm talking to Mamalu Stewart. He's a D.C. native who was sentenced to life in prison at the age of 16. He spent more than two decades behind bars. But he's a free man now. And more than a free man, he has changed his life, turned it around, a chance at redemption. And we are hearing his story tonight. If you have a question, if you have a comment, give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. There had to be, from the time you went in, you were young. I mean, you 16, you know, is young, too young to vote, barely old enough to legally drive a car. There's not a whole lot that a 16-year-old can do, still a kid. When did you start to see life differently behind bars? Was there something that touched you? Was there a moment where you said, it is time to make a change?
Well, of course. You know, like, I'm not one that chose the lifestyle. It actually chose me. And you know, when people say things like that, there's a group of people, not a color, not a skin color, but an energy that says, you chose to do what you did, or you chose that situation that you were in, right? And I've learned that, you know, no one wants to do wrong. No one wants to do bad, you know what I mean? Unless they have silenced their shame. Right, because it's something within us that normally, like, if you start to do things that are not aligned with your purpose, not aligned with, you know, the divinity within you, it approaches you. It you know what I'm saying? It reproaches you. It lets you know when you're not on a line. So of course, you know, you want to shift that, and I wanted to shift that from the day that I lost my father, the day that I lost my mother, the day that I lost my best friend, the day that I seen people be killed, be murdered, the day that I, you know, was stabbed in my face, the day. So it was always, so see, the reason why I say that, because I want people to understand that there's a process. There's a process to, you know, a person turning into some, you know, different than the baby that his mother knew. There's a process to that. So there's a process of, okay, hold on. Let me back. There's a process from when, you know, the mother carries the baby from 9 months, the baby comes out. He comes out innocent. He might be born into a sinful world, but he's not a sinful individual. He's a baby. You know what I mean? So with certain things that's in the community, in this social structure that transforms him. If it may, that makes his mind take a transition, whether it be movies, whether it be music, whether it be, you know, what he see in the school, what he see in his community, what he see on the news, what he see. And these things are ripple effects, right, of crime. So when hurt people are hurt, then they hurt people, right? So I think it went on like that for a while, of me wanting to change, and then because a person could want to change, but you have to have the tools in order to change. So I think I was maybe 28 years old, and I started to read. I always read, but I was reading things more so that had substance to it. And the major thing that I had read was the book that my father wrote. It was a thesis. It's not actually a book. It's a thesis that he wrote in order to get his doctorate degree in political science. And when I read it, I had the opportunity to see what he stood for, right? And it was sort of like if you ever seen the movie Lion King, where Simba, I think his name was Simba, the baby, the cub.
Mm-hmm.
And he was able, you know, they had walked him to the ocean, and he looked inside the ocean, and he saw his father, right? And it was at that point, because, you know, in the earlier stages of my life, I looked up to people that really didn't have an understanding, you know, or what I can say is maybe the understanding that they had gleaned was of being fascinated with our own fatality, right? And of course the fast money, the cars, and all of that is just the glamour that entices you to come to it. But once you come to it, it's more than you can bear. It's like you didn't sign up for this. I didn't sign up for this. You know, nobody, you know, would sign up to being a disaster. So when I started reading, it just changed my perspective about life. And I was 28 years old. It changed my perspective. I began to pray more. I was in contact with something within myself, a divinity, and I still am in contact with it. Not saying that there won't be mistakes, because in life there are mistakes, but it's really not mistakes. It's lessons. And there's no setbacks in life. It's only lessons. So from that age, I was able to be more impactful, you know, towards my transition of, you know, my mentality, the machismo, seeing things in a different light. I already saw it. The seed had already been planted when I met my father. But when you go through the struggle, when you go through trials and tribulations, wins, loses, and draws, you know, that is the water. That is the light. That is what helps that seed blossom. So I was always going to become who I was. It's just sad that I had to go through so many trials, tribulations, calamities, and different things to help me shape myself into the man that you see today.
I'm talking to Mamalu Stewart. He's a D.C. native who spent more than two decades in prison. This is a story not just about why he got there, but how he got out and what he's done with his life, a transformative story. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call. Let me go to Norris, calling from Maryland. Norris, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I just was listening to Mamalu talking. I myself am a returning citizen. I spent 33 years inside. I went in as a teenager, 17, came out 50. Went in uneducated, so I can relate to everything the brother is saying. This story just inspires me and other people out here and just, you know, striving to stay on course. Got my education inside, went in unable to read or write, functionally literate, no guidance, no structure. And just, you know, was able, like you said, I went through a lot inside to get to that point. The biggest thing for me was getting an education, learning to read. And once I learned to read, it was all about availing myself and just absorbing myself into every piece of material that I could read, anything about our culture, our history, just all types, religion, theology, spirituality, you know, just developing a God relationship, because when I went in, I didn't have any connection to any kind of religious center.
Yeah.
I didn't believe in God. I didn't pray, none of that.
Well, and, Norris, I've got to take a break, but thank you so much for sharing a bit of your story as well. And we certainly wish you, you know, the very best as you continue to move forward on this side of freedom. Thank you so much. We're going to continue this conversation with Mamalu Stewart in just a bit, but I need to take a break. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Don't forget, you can hear this entire broadcast on 96.3 HD2, the app. Just make sure you download it to your smartphone, or you can listen to it on 98.3 FM. We're going to take a break. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. I'm Harold Fisher. We'll be back in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue the story of Mamalu Stewart, a returning citizen with an inspiring tale of redemption. Mamalu is with us right now, and we continue this conversation. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Another call. Let me go to Vatriette, calling from Maryland. Vatriette, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I would like to know. I hear the gentleman has thought that the streets have brought him into a focus, and then some of the approach has got to assist him. Now, my concern is, I would like to know, during his transformative regroups and the reversals that are recognized now, was there ever an opportunity to say that it was a guilt of recognition for what would be standing up for himself, and that is not represented to what I would say collectively a group of people to say or distinguish that that's not considerable to what distinguishes supporting or, you know, basically...
Okay, Vatriette, I can't understand. I'm not sure I understand what you're asking. Can you clarify your question?
Okay, and that's what I'm doing, because I was listening to you and then I was listening to the gentleman. But what I'm saying is, like, in the transformative regroups, as you have renamed it, and then what is also what distinguishes the gentleman saying that his background and then what is now considerable, does it still continue to revive what is a understanding that representation for yourself distinguishes what is a general contact of violence, and or does it give him what is a coordination to say to people, regroup, and then distinguish an accountability?
Okay, I'm sorry. Mama Lou, do you understand what she's asking? I'm sorry, and we don't have a whole lot of time. If you can, you've confused me, to be quite honest, because I just don't know what you're trying to ask, and so I'm gonna have to let you go. If you want to kind of figure out specifically what you were saying, but I need to move on because we are short on time. Let me. What happened? How did the Justice Project with Kim Kardashian come into play with you?
Okay, so first and foremost, you know, I want to give a big shout out to Mark Howard, you know, the professor from Georgetown University.
Mm-hmm.
So fortunately, I am one of the ones that started off Georgetown University College in prison. Having the college come to the prison, right? I was fortunate to be at CTF, DC jail at the time, and I was taking classes in government as well as political science, African-American history, philosophy, writing and literature, philosophy, and I just, you know, was just having a ball in it. In that regard, while I was there, doing the classes, you know, Mark is the type of guy, like, you know, he empathizes, you know, he can empathize with you or sympathize with you to a degree, you know what I mean? Seeing a person that's being locked away and being under them conditions and having the opportunity to really meet a person, not for what the paperwork says, but, you know, really being able to meet you, your spirit, meet my spirit, meet me as the person that I am. And even under those conditions, I think I was pretty pretty much a likable type of guy. You know, of course, you know, I'm not always, like, you know, a perfect type of guy, but I, you know, you can read my intentions to a certain extent. So while I was in the class, I developed a strong friendship with Dr. Mark Howard, Professor Mark Howard. And, you know, I told him about my life, how my dad was a doctor in political science. He had several degrees and, you know, just being academically inclined. And, you know, he eventually shared my story and shared my story with Kim and thought that it would be a good thing if I was to write her a letter, and in which I did. And eventually I was able to speak to her face to face and, you know, just explain a lot of the calamities and situations, circumstances that negatively structured itself around my life and around my thoughts. And she's, you know, Kim is a very real type of person, you know, and I was just fortunate to speak from my heart to her heart. And, you know, that was an amazing thing. And even right now, like, just being here, like, you know, even though everybody, they, you know, they put emphasis on, you know, the fact that Kim helped me get home, and I'm definitely greatly and appreciative and grateful. But what's more amazing to me is just being able to be out here, you know, to take in nature, you know, to take in the art of nature and then to realize that it, there was an artist that created this. So I wanted to be understood to the fullest that let's put some emphasis on the creator. You know, let's put some emphasis on him, because before I met him, the creator was working with me, and he was preparing a place for me out here. And there's a saying that says, God will break your heart to blow your mind.
Yes.
And, you know, I've had my heart broken, and just by life in general, you know, losing so much. And but now that I know, that it wasn't a loss, it wasn't all a loss, you know what I mean, because a lot has been given back, and a lot has been given. And the universe doesn't take without giving.
Well, let me ask you about that, because I know we don't have a lot of time with you, because yes, you have also, if I may, breathed life into, you know, others who were incarcerated with you. You continue
Absolutely.
To do that. You didn't abandon the cause that you adopted when you were incarcerated. Talk to me about the work that you've done and the work that you were still trying to do.
Oh, man, that's a beautiful thing. Thank you. For starters, when I was inside, I was a mentor. I was I actually worked on the board of Victims Impact, taught guys what it was to, you know, what it was like to be a victim. Not only, you know, because a lot of guys, they think that, you know, from the machismo stand of view, like if you're committed a crime, that you're not a victim. You're a victim too. If you committed a crime, you are a victim as well. You know what I mean? Because you have to lay with that stuff. You have to lay down in the bed, and you have to remember what you've done. You know what I mean? Unless, like I said, unless you silence your shame. So I was a mentor inside. I taught about victims' impact. Not only that, I taught about just shifting the paradigm from crime to living a life of peace. Moving right along, there was a program called Young Men Emerging. And for the last 2 years of my incarceration, I was there as a mentor. So I did a lot of teaching. I did a lot of educating. And education comes with more listening. Since I've been home, I started an organization. The organization is the LLC. The actual website is under construct, and I'm putting things together with the nonprofit organization right now. But the LLC is called NEED. NEED is an acronym for Nothing Exceeds Educational Development. And what I do with this is I come into impoverished communities, and I deal with the youth on a platform that allows them to be themselves, express themselves, but understand that the part of you that has been labeled is not you. You know what I mean? That is a part of you that's not you. And I've become certified in restorative justice. I am a restorative justice practitioner. I also use NEED, the organization, to, you know, we through music, we allow the children to express themselves, and that allows a healing. You know, they record themselves. We have the all the things that we need, at least most of it, you know, to get the kids recorded, and, you know, so they can hear themselves. So, you know, when you get to hear yourself, you're able to heal yourself. If you can hear yourself, you can heal yourself. Hmm. You know what I mean? But a lot of times we become desensitized, right? We become desensitized, and we think that's a healing, but it's just a Band-Aid. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's just a Band-Aid. So when you take the Band-Aid off, you still got to deal with the wound. Hmm. So, you know, just dealing with the children and dealing with young people and dealing with all people from a perspective of grace. You know what I mean? Knowing that I'm not here because of Kim. Knowing I'm not here because I'm a clever guy or I'm a smart guy or I'm a brilliant guy. Even though I think those things about myself, I realize that I'm just here by grace. I'm humbled. I'm humbled by my creator. I'm humbled by my ancestors. And it's because of them that I'm here.
Yeah. I know we've got to let you go. But I wanted to thank you for spending a little time with us and sharing your story. I wish you only, you know, the very best in what you have created since coming back home. And I really hope that, you know, you continue to inspire young people, old people, and continue to lend that helping hand. I really, really appreciate your time, Mama Lou Stewart.
Okay. Hey, listen, I want to extend my appreciation as well as my honor because you've been doing this for a long time. You know, my mother and my mothers have heard about you, you know what I mean? So when I told them I was speaking at WHUI, they said, oh, you about to speak to Harold Fisher. <You know? laughs> I was like, okay. And I didn't even get the name. All I knew I was speaking to WHUI, but they said the name. So, you know, once my family has that type of esteem for a person, I haven't even met them. You know, now I've met you. You know, I had the honor to say that I've met you, that I had a conversation with you, and that we build. And hopefully everybody that hears this conversation, hopefully it impacts them, you know what I mean, in a positive way. Even if they're going through something, know that if I made it through what I made it through of 23 years of being in the bowels of the serpent, and that's like, you can think about your worst day in the free world, right? And I guarantee you, it won't top your worst day in prison. So my worst day out here in the free world is better than my best day in prison.
Yeah.
So I'm just happy to be here, and I'm thankful that you invited me to the show. And I say God bless you, and may the ancestors be with you as well as everybody that was able to attend.
Mama Lou, thank you so much. I appreciate that. And thank your family, too, for listening. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm going to tell my mother.
All right. we're gonna take a break. When we come back, we're going to hear some phone calls. And we're also going to continue this conversation. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue with the story of Mama Lou Stewart, the returning citizen with an inspiring tale of redemption. Joining us now is inmate life coach Seminde Lloyd. We're going to hear from her in a bit, but I want to take these phone calls before we talk to Seminde. Let's talk to BJ, calling from Maryland. BJ, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thanks for having my call, Harold Fisher, man. Always a pleasure. I was just excited to hear Mama Lou speak, man. It's just always good to hear some real conversation. My biggest thing that I always like to ask people in his position and people in his space is how important it is to use your network. You know, your network can be your network. They can show your value as you make that transition. So I just wanted to at least hear his word. I know I might have missed him.
Yeah, I think you did. We had to let him go, but I would say, BJ, that is an excellent question. And no matter where you are, whether you've been, you know, incarcerated, you know, whether you've never been, that, you know, that network is the thing that keeps you relevant, that keeps you, you know, surviving, because there are people that you know growing up who had those resources that you perhaps never thought about before. So I think that is a critical issue that you brought up.
Yep, that's all I wanted, man. But God bless you. Always listening, man. Have a good one.
All right, thank you so much, BJ. Let's go to Stanley, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Stanley. What's on your mind?
Yes, sir. Good evening. I'd just like to say, you know, I was driving my car home, and the brother said something that was so profound to where I had to pull over. And what he said and touched me was the fact that he knew from trial and tribulation that he was pretty much predisposed to the situation of going through incarceration, going through the trials and tribulations of unfolding, becoming a man, and what he had to go through. He fought his way through it, and I appreciate it. And I remember when I was 9 years old, people from Human Services came and asked my mother, because she took me for a ride, and she allowed me to go, and they took me down to a place called Maple Glen, which was an institution for young offenders. And I'm 9 years old, so I understand wholeheartedly what he said about being predisposed. He didn't use the word predisposed, but that's how it injected it for me, because all of us have our own stories, and all of us have our own trials and tribulations. If I look around and see the friends, the family members that I've lost, I just had a son that was murdered 2 years ago, and I'm still struggling with that. But, hey, my network is going to allow me to stay strong and keep moving. And I want to tell that bro, man, keep your head up, man, and keep moving.
Yeah, the story was inspirational. And just like BJ said, you talked about the network. BJ was talking about the network. And, you know, Mama Lou Stewart's story is definitely inspirational. It suggests that all things are possible, no matter where you're going and what has happened to you. Even during the break, I was thinking, gosh, and after hearing him, I didn't know what to say. It was an inspiration, and to know that not only could he turn his life around, but has helped to turn the life around of the lives around of others, and considering what he's doing with children, trying to make sure that they don't, you know, fall into that same dark hole that he did, that was just a part of the environment. So, Stanley, thank you so much. I appreciate your phone call.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much, Mr. Harold Fisher. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate you. Let's go to Seminde Lloyd. Seminde, thanks for, you know, being on the program. I had mentioned in the beginning that you were part of the process. He said that you weren't. Can you straighten that out for me?
Well, first of all, have me on the air once.
Absolutely.
Your show is always a pleasure. I don't have much to say about what, you know, Mama Lou stated. I would say that, you know, he spoke well of his story. He has an incredible story. I have worked with the DC jail since 2003, and I've been there since working with the inmates, families of the inmates, children of those incarcerated, as you all already know. So I don't have anything against what Mama Lou said. He is right. I have not met Mama Lou or had any discussion with him since returning home. Now, the people that I focus on the most are those who are less fortunate, those who don't have much resources. And as you see, Mama Lou has a lot of resources. Even when he was in jail, he had a lot of resources. So my focus right now are on those who have less resources. But, you know, he did a wonderful job, and he has always been one who has been determined, know what he wants, know where he comes from, and knows where he's going.
So for... based on your experience with the incarcerated, is his story possible for everyone who has been locked up?
I will say yes and no. His story is definitely possible. If you enter prison, like he stated, his first few years in prison was different. Once he read his father's story or his father's writing, that was an awakening process for him. And he did not just read his father's story. He read his father's story from the heart. And so because he read it from the heart with an emotion, because that was his father's writing, it did something to him. His father was probably speaking to him in his writing from his grave. And I think that was one of the revelation that he had. Now, Mama Lou, I said, yes, it's possible because of what he did with what he read. I said no, because Mama Lou could have read his father's story, yet synthesized on this is my father, but did nothing with it. So yes, for those who take action, and it will be no for those who do not take action. But for those who don't take action, sometimes it is not because they don't want to take action. Like you stated, crime is there. Everyone, you know, does something wrong. And he also stated something profound, that the person who commits the crime is also a victim. So when you are given something but don't know what to do with it, or don't have the resources to help you do something with what you already have, it can be a disaster. And that's why I said no.
He spoke about the, you know, the trauma that he was, you know, born into, the the environment that so many young people, this isn't just a D.C. story. This could be Baltimore, Miami, Los Angeles. It could be Wichita, Kansas. And the impact that it had, you know, on him. And he admitted, yes, he made some, you know, some choices that he should not have made that put him in the position that, you know, that he was in. And yet it took 12 years and the spark of his father's dissertation to begin the process of turning around. But I think this is also a cautionary tale about what these environments can do to our children.
And not only what the environment can do to our children, but what we ourselves can plant, you know, for our children. And we as parents, we as leaders have to be very mindful. And sometimes one would say, okay, what home did that person come from? Or who raised that child? But you also have to realize that you cannot blame a parent who probably did not have guidance. And you cannot, regardless of the education, regardless of the exposure, some people may have been raised in a home with a lot of trauma. And then you have your own child, and you are raising your child from where you came from. And so that child is a learned behavior. When it comes to a person as Mamalu did mention about his trauma as a young person. And I would say that when you don't, after one loses a parent, and he mentioned that he lost both his mother and his father, the trauma alone that he may have gone through that led him, you have lost your mother, you have lost your father. So he went looking for love in all the wrong places, and that is to his best friend, to his neighbors, to, you know, the people that he hung up with. And where he found that comfort, where he found that love, and remember now, this is a child that was not given an opportunity to have counseling or coaching or therapy after his father died and after he lost his mother. So it's not just where he grew up. It's not. It also has to do with society. Once the community knew that that child lost his mother, and he also lost his father, first his father, then his mother, community should have stepped in to make sure that he had all of the resources. Yet, after community did not do what they were supposed to do, the government didn't do what they were supposed to do by him, they knew what happened to his father. They did not reach out to those children. But yet, when he committed a crime, they sentenced him to life.
Yeah. Well, I would say that, and it's ironic that you talk about resources, because he may not have had the resources that he wanted or needed before being incarcerated, but he most certainly has become a resource and an inspiration now that he has his freedom. Yeah.
And he was that way even in prison, even in jail. What he's doing now, you know, when I heard about what he's doing, it was nothing new. Mamalu did not sit in company that he did not benefit from. And if someone was doing something foolish, he did not condone it. He was always ready and willing to help the younger guys in the unit that he mentioned, the young emergent. He was a mentor, like he stated, and he has always been a servant leader.
Yeah.
So what he's doing right now is not surprising. As I stated, I have not seen him, nor have we spoken since his return. And so he is right. I have not participated in his reentry, and I did not claim to have participated in his re-entry.
Well, we're out of time, but Seminde Lloyd, I want to thank you so much for your time. We also want to thank Mamalu Stewart for his inspirational conversation, and we wish him a continued success as he tries to improve our community. That is the Daily Drum for this Wednesday, May 26th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now, stay tuned for Unheard with Wes Hall. Good night.